This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Walk Softly, Peter Troy. We'll hear his debut episode from December 10th, 1963, titled The Blonde with the Delicate Air. After that, it's The Adventures of Ellery Queen and The Scarecrow and the Snowman, his story from January 22nd, 1944.
Being a private investigator means two things. You can be sure you'll run into trouble, and you can never be sure you'll get out of it. Well, there's not much you can do about it, I guess. Except, like Julie always says...
Walk softly, Peter Troy.
And now Peter Troy investigates The Blonde with a Delicate Air.
This girl Julie you met a moment ago, she keeps the bill collectors at bay and generally runs the place I loosely call my office. You'll meet her again in a little while. But right now, I want you to meet the lush lovely this case is all about. Her name is Caroline Varley, but most people call her
Carol.
Oh, sorry, Lawrence. I was a million miles away.
So I noticed. Cigarette?
No, thanks, darling.
Beautiful girl. Soft lights. All we need now is the sweet music.
I don't need a thing.
Delicate. That's the operative word, Carol. Blonde with a delicate air. That's how I'll always think of you.
No. That's nothing.
Oh, dear.
Expecting anyone?
No, and as far as I'm concerned, whoever it is can go jump in the lake.
Better answer the door and get rid of them, darling.
Yes, I guess so.
And hurry back.
Huh? Yes, what do you... Crack.
Hello, Webster.
Now, look, I can explain...
Shut up. Get back inside.
Give me that...
You didn't have to do that.
I didn't mean to. You jumped me.
Is he...
No. No, he's still breathing. Where's the package?
In the drawer of that desk. He put it there as soon as we came in.
Good.
Well, what happens now?
We have someone deliver the package for us, that's all.
Anyone in mind?
Yes. Troy. Peter Troy.
Oh, that name sounds familiar.
Private investigator, Canadian. Tough, very tough. And a ladies' man.
Oh, yes, of course, I remember now.
Open up here a couple of years ago. Done very well, by all accounts.
You think he'll do a job like this?
Sure. Afterwards, I'm afraid Mr. Peter Troy will just have to die.
Pity.
Necessary.
But, well, into each life some death must fall.
It had been one of those bad months. Seems no one in London needed the services of a private investigator. Money was like chorus girls in Alcatraz. There wasn't any. So to rent collectors and sundry tradesmen, I was but definitely out. But to delicate, dewy-eyed, husky-voiced blondes like Carol Varley, I was but definitely in.
So, to put it briefly, I need protection, Mr. Troy.
Uh-huh. I'll go along with that, Miss Varley. Springtime, a young man's fancy.
This young man is going to try to kill me.
Uh-huh. Well, that's no way to win friends and influence people, is it? Who is the guy?
An irate suitor, Mr. Troy. He wants to marry me. I declined the invitation, and now he's threatened to kill me.
And?
The job pays £100 for approximately 2 hours' work.
That buys you a grade A bundle of protection, Miss Farley. Is this, character got a name?
Laurie Webster. He's a very persistent man. He's been pestering me for months. He just won't take no for an answer.
It happens.
Just not my type, you know? Anyway, he's coming round to my place tonight to propose again.
And if you say no?
He said that if he can't have me, no one else will.
That sounds corny, but you want me to be there.
I thought you might be able to disillusion him just a little. If you know what I mean.
I'm way ahead of you.
My address is 15 Carlisle Road, South Kensington. 8:30 this evening?
On the nose.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, ma'am.
Carol.
That's nice.
I'll get some bourbon in.
Bourbon?
Well, don't all private detectives drink straight bourbon?
You've been reading too many pulp magazines. I'm the exception. Scotch.
I remember that.
The exception or the scotch?
Both. 8:30? I'll see you then.
Hi. 8:30 on the nose.
I like punctuality in a man. Come in.
Thanks.
Do you get many of these sort of assignments, Mr. Troy?
Oh, well, I was going to talk to you about that. £100, that's a lot of money just to dissuade a guy from carrying a gal off to the altar.
Why don't I go to the police?
Uh-huh.
I value my privacy, Mr. Troy. Don't you? Yeah. Scotch?
Thanks. £100 worth of privacy? Has he phoned you or anything yet?
Oh, he won't phone. He'll just arrive. In the meantime, let's relax, hmm? Do you like music?
Me and Beethoven were just like that.
You can't dance to Beethoven.
Well, that's the point.
You dance very well.
Thanks. It's a nice place you have here.
It's home.
No place like it.
Hold it right there, Mr. Troy.
Company, huh?
Don't turn around and don't move, Mr. Troy.
Nasty way to break in on a dance, mister.
Isn't it, though?
Oh, poor Mr. Troy. He danced so nicely.
All right, Carol. Help me set the scene. We haven't much time.
Aching head.
Troy, you must have a head like a cannonball.
Oh, that's all I need. The charming and benign features of Detective Inspector Mellamy of New Scotland Yard bending over me. Ooh, ooh, brother. What are you doing here anyway?
Investigating?
Yeah, well, I went to report a case of assault and battery. I was just a... Hey, where's a cute little blonde bombshell?
Which cute little blonde bombshell?
The gal who owns this apartment.
That smack on the head must have addled your brains, Troy. This apartment belongs to a man. Or at least it did. Mr. Laurie Webster.
What do you mean, dead?
The aforementioned gent is, I regret to say, very dead. Shot at close range. That's what I'm investigating.
Now, wait a minute. Where did all this happen? You got a suspect or anything? Because if you haven't, I might just be able to...
The answer to your first question is right here in this apartment. In fact, right here in this room. If you move your head a fraction, you'll see the late Mr. Webster stretched out on the floor just a couple of feet away from you.
Hey, well, this just doesn't make sense.
As for your second question, yes, I do have a suspect. A private investigator called Peter Troy.
Oh, very funny. I'm not in the mood for jokes.
Want to tell me about it?
Tell you about it? What would I want to kill Webster for? I've never even seen the guy.
Guns on the floor beside you. A Smith & Wesson .32. And I've no doubt your fingerprints are splattered all over the butt.
Now, you know I don't use a Smith & Wesson. I got a license to carry a Browning automatic.
A license which I regret to say must be withdrawn.
Now, look, this is a frame, and you know it, Inspector. They set me up. How did you know about all this, anyway?
A phone call, Mr. Troy. The caller said there was some trouble here in Carlisle Road.
Yeah, with me right in the middle, huh? Well, it's nothing that the trouble is going to be, just as soon as I...
Your secretary, Julie's outside... Have Miss Summers come in, Constable.
Roger.
Miss Summers, please. Oh, Pete, they made me tell them about
it. Oh, I get it. I get it all now.
Julie told you about the blonde that came to see me this afternoon, the girl who wanted a bodyguard to protect her from an over-anxious suitor, and you think
I think you took your duties too seriously. You didn't have to shoot him, you know.
I didn't shoot anybody.
Oh, maybe the Smith & Wesson belongs to him, eh? He pulled it on you, there was a struggle, you got possession of the gun, pulled the trigger.
Now, look, you know me. I'm the sort of guy that goes around giving people lead poisoning. Take that weasel lying over there with my hands tied behind my back.
That weasel gave you a fair-sized clout on the noggin, laddie.
Julie, you better get hold of Randell. Looks as though I'm going to need a lawyer.
You're already legally represented, Mr. Troy.
Huh? All right, you can come in now.
Thank you.
Who are you?
Oh, my name's Regan, of Regan, Regan and Forsyth Solicitors. My card. I shall be happy to look after your case, and for the moment I strongly advise you not to answer any more questions.
Who sent for him?
Yeah, I heard about the disturbance and thought you might need help. Furthermore, I think I can furnish the police with a witness. A witness whose testimony will clear you completely, Mr. Troy.
Well, now, that's more like it.
Where are you going to get this witness from, Mr. Regan?
Now, Inspector, you should know better than that. The defense cannot give away its sources of information at this particular juncture. Now, I should like a word in private with my client, please. This way, Mr. Troy.
Just don't try and leave this flat, either of you.
Well, now, Mr. Regan, I think it's all very charming, but
you're in trouble, Mr. Troy. Bad trouble.
Hmm?
In fact, it would seem that you could wind up with a rope around your neck.
Yeah, but I thought you said something about a witness.
Yeah, I did. But I omitted to say in front of the inspector that my particular witness, if she gave her testimony, would most certainly take you straight to jail. You see, Miss Carol Varley was here when you shot down Laurie Webster.
Well, I know that she was... Oh.
Now,
you mean she's part of the frame?
A rather luscious frame, don't you think, to coin a phrase? Yes, I'm afraid you're in trouble, Mr. Troy. Real trouble.
Well, this was certainly cute. This was really cute. This was the tender trap. The more you struggle, the deeper you get into it. But this guy Regan, now here was an angle.
Yes, a rather delicate predicament, isn't it? Of course, I'd like to help you, Mr. Troy.
The lady sent you?
As a matter of fact, yes.
How come?
She has a proposition.
She had one before. Look where it got me.
This could be an answer to your problem. You see, I can tie up the police legally and demand your formal bail. Without Miss Varley's testimony, they have very little real evidence.
You ever watched Inspector Mellonby at work? He makes Dick Tracy look like an amateur.
Nevertheless, I can get you out of here.
And?
And naturally, we shall want a small favor in return.
How small?
From here, you are to go home and you are to make no phone calls. Tomorrow morning, you go to your office as usual, and you pay particular attention to the parcel mail when it arrives. There'll be a package for you. It'll be double wrapped.
Well, keep talking.
Undo the outer wrapping and you will see a letter addressed to you. In it, there will be some instructions. You follow them, but you do not, I repeat, you do not open the inner package. It's been specially sealed, and we shall know immediately if it's been tampered with.
You're an untrusting lad, aren't you?
Mr. Troy, all you have to do is deliver that package. It's not a very difficult job. In return for doing that, I offer you your freedom.
I've got another suggestion, Mr. Regan.
Oh?
Why don't I just bop you one and make a quick exit?
I may not have seen Mellonby at work, but you have. How far do you think you'd get?
About a block and a half.
You see? My way, you've got nothing to lose, Mr. Troy.
Okay, so I go along with it. But just tell me one thing.
If I can.
Who really did kill that fellow Webster?
That you did, Mr. Troy. Ask Inspector Mellonby. He's positive you did.
Troy didn't kill that man. Oh, I know I've cursed that wretched Canadian troublemaker in my time, but I will say one thing in his favor. He's no killer.
But the evidence, sir.
What evidence? Look, a man lies dead on the floor with a bullet in him. The police surgeon maintains that he's been dead for 24 hours. Troy didn't even know a man called Webster existed 24 hours ago.
Well, I still don't think it was wise to let Troy go, Inspector.
Regan knew we couldn't hold him. We had to let him go. Incidentally, Troy's being shadowed.
Best team in the yard looking after him, sir.
Good. Troy's no fool, and I think he's purposely sticking his neck out.
You mean he may be setting himself up as a bait, sir?
Yes, the fool. When will he learn to stop poking his nose into police matters?
Well, this time he really didn't have any option, sir, did he?
I wonder what's behind all this. Anything from ballistics yet?
They're still working on the serial number. It's been burnt off with acid. They're putting it through photo analysis, but it takes time, unfortunately.
Yes, yes. Anything on the deceased yet?
Well, we know one thing. He has a criminal record. Spent a couple of years in Dartmoor. Worked an old confidence game. But that was 5 years ago. Not a thing since then.
Why was he killed? We'll get the answer to that and... Oh, to the devil with Troy. Why didn't he stay in Montreal?
What's the package, Pete?
Present from Santa Claus for being a good boy all year.
Pete?
Hmm?
I'm sorry about blabbing to the police. I had no idea.
That's okay, honey.
Well, I just wanted to help.
That's nice.
How is it you get yourself into so much trouble, Pete?
Trouble and me got married a long time ago, baby.
Will they arrest you again?
No.
How can you be so sure?
Because Mellonby knows I didn't kill Webster.
But
he was looking for a patsy, too. You got your notebook handy?
Yes.
Well, take this down. Troy, deliver the enclosed package to a Mr. Giles Nolan, Honeywick Cottage, Levendale.
Mm-hmm.
Levendale? Where's that?
Buckinghamshire, about 40 miles from London.
Uh-huh. Deliver it today. Deliver it unopened. You're being watched.
Oh, Pete.
I make with the pencil, honey. You're being watched, and if you attempt to contact anyone else, there'll be trouble. An old word again. Don't allow yourself to be followed by plainclothesmen. And my angel, our anonymous letter writer, has enclosed 20 crisp little fibers.
They look real, too.
Oh, there's a postscript. No matter what happens, this package must reach Levendale.
Pete, I'm getting that old feeling again.
Yeah, it looks as though someone's going to try and stop me from getting this package to Mr. Nolan, doesn't it?
Well, let me ring through to Inspector Mellon.
Oh, no. You just put that copy of the letter into an envelope and send it to him express. Addressed to his home, not Scotland Yard. Okay?
But it'd be so much easier to phone.
You're a sweet, innocent babe, and I love you like a brother.
I've got a brother.
You know something? I'll bet our phones are tapped this morning.
Oh, Pete, don't go.
Judy calls. See you.
Oh, men. Peter Troy Investigations.
Miss Banner.
Yes?
I gather Mr. Troy has left.
Who is this?
Never mind. Just don't make any phone calls today, Miss Summers. Otherwise, I'm afraid you'll never see your employer again.
What?
And don't answer the phone if it should ring.
But
don't attempt to leave the office until 5:30 this evening. Stay just where you are.
But I have to go to the post, and I certainly...
Don't attempt to leave the office. You are being watched. Leave the post till tomorrow, or you won't live till tomorrow.
But... Hello? Hello?
I couldn't care less who makes the delivery, Miss Varley, just so long as I get the stuff.
Oh, you'll get it, Mr. Nolan. No need to worry about that.
Yes, and what about Webster?
He had an unfortunate accident.
Yes, in other words, he was hijacked and killed. Sounds like Craig's work. Is Craig making the delivery, then?
Oh, no, that wouldn't be very smart, would it? Webster's men know Craig too well. They intercept him before he left London.
Well, then.
The delivery will be made by a rather dashing young Canadian private investigator called Peter Troy.
Private investigator?
Oh, don't worry, Mr. Nolan. He's completely trustworthy. He had to be. He's living very close to a noose at present.
And I've heard of Peter Troy. He's tough. He's very tough.
But of course, that's the whole idea. No one's going to hijack that messenger.
And what happens after he's made the delivery?
Now, what would you think?
I see.
Occupational hazard, Mr. Nolan.
He was going to do it.
You are.
Oh, no. No, no, wait a minute.
Because if you don't, Peter Troy will get you, Mr. Nolan, one way or another. I doubt very much whether he's in the sweetest temper just at present. As soon as he hands over the package to you, you give me the money, and then Mr. Troy dies.
Excuse me, sir. Are these seats taken?
I'll be my guest.
Nice weather for this time of year,
isn't it, though?
Going far?
Oh, just as far as Levendale. Say, excuse me a minute, will you? I'd just like to get something from the rack above you.
Can I give you a hand?
No, thanks. I can manage. All I really want is this briefcase. Ah, oh, there we are. Just want to get something out of it. My gun, as a matter of fact.
Now, look.
I'm a very nervous sort of guy, so just don't make any sudden moves. Well, now, I guess you're a couple of Caroline Varley's little playmates, huh? Mr. Regan sent you?
Now, Troy.
Oh, you know my name. Well, that's neighborly. Now, just take off your neckties.
Our ties?
All the better to tie you up with.
Troy, we're police officers. I'm Sergeant Benson, and this is...
Don't make me laugh. You characters have been tailing me ever since I left my office this morning. Okay, get those ties off, or I'll have to do it the hard way.
Funny old place.
Come in, Troy. The door's on the latch. All right. Put the package on the table in front of you.
I have to make a personal delivery, mister.
Put the package on the table.
Look, it's kind of dark in here. Okay. Don't I even get to see who you are?
You don't need to, Troy. You don't ever need to see anyone again.
I don't like the sound of that.
Don't turn around. Stay exactly as you are.
You know, when people say that to me, mister, I get nervous. I start looking around for something like this table.
All right, Troy. Come on out.
Give me a good reason. Not good enough, Buster.
He's got a gun.
So what? You've got him trapped.
Ah, the Lady Caroline. It figures.
Well, this is your last chance. Throw out that gun, Troy.
You want it? Come and get it.
What the devil?
Something came from the window.
Gas. Tear gas. Troy, this is Mellonby. You all right?
Yeah, but hold everything, Inspector.
Police. I'm a cordon of men surrounding the place.
Well, keep him outside. Might be able to reason with this guy now.
Not a chance, Troy. I'll give you 2 minutes, and then we're coming in.
That ought to do it. All right, fella. You got no chance against the police. You may as well call it a day.
Give myself up. Not a chance.
Are you crazy? They've got us cold.
The lady's right, you know.
They'll never take me alive.
Watch it, Melanie. He's making a break for it.
You fool! Come back!
Find some other way, Inspector. In any case, how come you got to the scene of the nick-up?
Well, Troy...
You can thank your lucky stars you've got an efficient secretary.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you delivered a message,
the message? You don't know the trouble I had doing that little chore. I was being watched. I couldn't leave the office, nor could I use the phone.
Then,
But at 9:30 this morning, I had a visitor. Guess who?
You got me.
Our very irate landlord demanding the back rent. I gave him the letter and told him to take it straight round to Inspector Mellonby.
Okay, so you're a genius.
Troy, did you have any conception of what was in store for you?
Yeah, sort of. But I had to play it out. Otherwise, we're going to lose track of our playmates.
It is dope, isn't it? Heroin. There was enough of the pure stuff in that package to poison a herd of elephants. It was hijacked from the dead man, Webster. He had it smuggled in. Carol and her boyfriend decided to take it from him and make the delivery themselves.
And the difficulty was getting it to Nolan.
Webster's boys knew Carol's boyfriend. The delivery had to be made by a stranger.
And her Troy. Well, I'm glad I was ready for the ambush.
And in future, Troy, please try to refrain from tying up my police officers in trains. They don't appreciate it.
They really were your men?
They were.
You heard what the man said.
Hmm?
Walk softly, Peter Troy.
Here she comes, ladies and gentlemen, the promo seltzer special. Bringing you radio's most thrilling mystery drama, The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
Hello,
Tonight, the makers of Bromo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective, in person. Ellery Queen invites you to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unravels. Before revealing the solution, he stops the play, gives you a chance to solve the mystery. Our guest armchair detectives for this evening are film star Miss Jean Cagney and Mr. Peter Cusack, Executive Secretary of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. And now, Ellery Queen, Master Detective and your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, I'm going to tell you about the exotic adventure of the Scarecrow and the Snowman. One July morning, some years before the war, Dad, Nicky, Sergeant Veeley, and I were driving to the rich farm country of the Midwest. Suddenly, we rounded a curve and saw a red barn and a big, clapboard farmhouse shaded by elm trees. Sergeant, stop.
What farm, Maestro? We're in the middle of no place.
I want to take color movies of this farm.
You and your movie camera, Ellery.
Nice out of that scarecrow over there in the cornfield, son.
Swell, Dad.
So that's a scarecrow. What do you know?
Get that farm in the picture, son.
There, Ellery, see? Walking toward the scarecrow.
Yes, very nice.
Wait a minute. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
What's he yelling at?
Yelling for help, Nicky.
Oh. Come on, let's get over there. Hey, farmer. What's the matter?
What's wrong?
Why, he's the color of death.
It's bleeding. It's bleeding.
What bleeding?
Scarecrow.
That scarecrow? It is bleeding.
Them rags, that's Crow Kitty. That's our regular scarecrow.
And how could a scarecrow bleed?
Because it's not a scarecrow, you clerk.
It's a man dressed in the scarecrow's dust.
Get him off this pole.
Right, Jack. I got
him. He's been tied to the stake by his belt.
But how the old fire tarnation did he get here?
Don't you know? Easy now. That's it, Dad.
Badly wounded, Ellery. Unconscious. Hey, you, farmer. What's this farm? Who are you?
This is the Mayfield place. I'm Josh Bullen. I run the place for old man Mayfield. Okay,
where's the nearest doctor, Mr. Bullen?
Berryville Hospital, 6-7 miles from here.
We'll have to rush in there. Come on, Dad. It's going to be a race with death.
That country doctor's certainly taking his time in there. Just how was the man hurt, Inspector?
Stabbed twice in the chest, Nicky.
I wonder who he is. Not an identifying mark on him.
Yes, quite a mystery. Mr. Bullen.
Yes,
Mr. Who lives on the Mayfield farm besides yourself?
Well, now, there's me and my wife, Josie Mayfield. We've been married 4 years now, and Josie's pa, old man Mayfield. It's really his place, but I run it.
Don't tell me there's no Ma Mayfield, Mr. Bullen.
There sure is, Miss Porter. Josie's ma, my mother-in-law. Wonderful woman. Cooks, keeps house, helps out in the fields. Strong as a plowmare, Ma Mayfield is. I sort of wish Josie took after her, Ma.
Your wife, Mr. Bullen? What's wrong with her?
Josie's been sickly, Mr. Queen. Ever since our baby died. Stays abed most times. Ain't got the strength to crawl downstairs now. Well, say, here's Dr. Jenkins.
How's your patient?
Will he pull through, Dr. Jenkins?
Yes, he will. Must be made of iron.
I'd like to talk to him, Doctor.
Can't now, Mr. Queen. He's unconscious. Say, Josh, who is he, do you know?
Darned if I do, Doc. Never seen him before.
Me neither. Huh. Thought I knew everyone in the county, too.
Doctor, I'd like to photograph your patient.
I know it.
Take his picture? Well, I imagine he'll have to get the sheriff's permission.
But it's attempted murder.
Henry, take your photo.
And, Doctor, no one's to see or talk to the victim, so we can question him.
All right.
Please notify us at the local hotel the moment he regains consciousness.
Yeah.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more. But first, Ernest Chappell.
Maybe you think you've got a tough job. But Mr. Willis C. Latshaw of Spring City, Pennsylvania, has a job that really puts the pressure on. Here's what he writes.
I'm one of the guards in an important aircraft engine company. We've got to see that nothing and nobody gets into our plant who's not supposed to. Picture us on a 12-hour watch, every nerve tense, ready for anything that might happen, when up pops one of those pesky headaches. The boys on my shift know how to handle that, though. We make a beeline for the plant dispensary or first aid station for our old friend, Bromo Seltzer. We found there's nothing better for quick relief from headache and jittery nerves.
And you're right, Mr. Willis. Bromo Seltzer fights headache 3 ways. Helps you feel a lot better, fast. So the next time you've got a common sick headache, friends, try Bromo Seltzer, won't you? Then write and tell us your own experience. Just address your letter to Ellery Queen in care of the station to which you are listening. And now back to our story. Ellery has photographed the mysterious scarecrow man
and had the photo developed. Now, several hours later, the Queens are driving Josh Bullen back to the Mayfield farm.
Henry, think someone in the Mayfield place carved that fellow up?
I don't know, Dad. Keep your eyes open.
Well, here we are.
Whew. Isn't it hot?
Man, what I'd give for a sidle of beer.
Beer?
I'll get Ma Mayfield to fix you the finest drink of ginger beer you ever tasted.
Stop fighting me! Who's that crazy-looking old man on the porch?
What's he waving that shotgun at us for?
It's all right, Pa. I know these folks.
Don't get scared. That's just my father-in-law.
Mr. Mayfield, if you'll put that shotgun down...
I know if you, Jonathan, maybe till I clap the eye, Johnny. Stand where you be.
Pa, this ain't Jonathan. It's Mr. Queen.
It's still Jonathan Dyke. You boy, met touch the puppy day.
Hey, the old squirrel ain't getting.
You won't get, eh?
He's going to shoot.
Henry, Duck, come on. Get behind the car, all of you.
All right, I warned you.
Yeah.
Hey,
Ma! For heaven's sake, Mr. Bullen, who does he think I am? Who's Jonathan?
My wife's brother. Old man Mayfield's son.
Ma!
Who's the shooting? Land of mercy, Pa, you give me that gun.
Yeah, Ma, I'm going to shoot Jonathan Gage.
You are going to march up to the attic to your room, Pa Mayfield.
No, I'm not. I'm going
to go away. Ooh. Sorry. The old lady's okay. See the way she took that gun away from the old bazook? Sorry as all get out, folks. You see, Jonathan Mayfield got into a heap of trouble, and his pa said he'd kill him if he ever showed his face around the farm again. Old man's out of his head.
Why don't you put him away, Bullen?
Ma won't hear of it, Inspector. Besides, Pa's quiet most times. Come on into the house. Ma, that you?
Yes, George. Well, Pa's all right now. Come in. Come on in.
Thank you, ma'am.
Ma, these folks are fretting for some of your extra special ginger beer.
Josh, you take him into the parlor, and I'll be right in with a big pitcher. Just make yourselves right to home, folks.
Now, this way, folks.
Thank you.
What? Why, Josie.
Josh? Oh, hello.
Downstairs, Josie? Sitting in the parlor all by yourself. Folks, this is my wife, Josie Mayfield Bullen.
Hello,
Mrs. Bullen.
Oh, I'm so glad. It's so very nice having you.
Well, sit down, folks.
Yes,
you will. My, Josie talks mighty fine, eh? Had 2 years of state college, Josie did.
This girl is so pretty. Are you married? Why, no, I'm not. I am. I had a baby once. It was the cutest baby. She had blue eyes and the softest blonde hair.
Now, Josie, you know we don't talk about the baby.
Oh, Ma, where's that ginger beer?
Come in, Josh, come in. Well, what's everybody so quiet for? Josie, have you been talking about the baby again?
It was a girl, Ma. Remember? Oh, the sweetest little girl.
This place gives me the jeepers, Inspector. Not old, not this girl here.
Henry, show him that photo when that's beating.
Come on, folks, now. Come on, try some of this.
Oh, just thank you, brother, Mayfield. Oh, by the way, do you recognize the man in this photograph?
This fella?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, can't say as I do. Josie, drink?
No, thanks, Mom. I was going to name my baby Mary Ellen, you know.
Ellery, please. Let's go.
We're talking folders now. Here's one of Jonathan, Josie's brother.
Josh, put that album away.
Please, may I see it, Mr. Bullen?
Sure.
Dad, come over here.
Here, miss. Can I give you some juice to eat?
It's not the wounded man, Dad.
Nope. There's ambulance to the stranger town. What do you say we go?
No, Dad. We're staying in Derryville till I find out who that scarecrow man is and who tried to murder him.
Finally, 3 days later, Dr. Jenkins said we could question the stranger. But when we went to the man's room at the hospital, we found that he'd escaped through a window. It was Ellery Hopper. The scarecrow man gone, and we still didn't know who he was or who had tried to murder him.
Well, we hung around trying to find someone who recognized the scarecrow man from Ellery's picture of him, but no one knew him, so we gave up. 6 months later, January it was, we got a letter from the Derryville Justice of the Peace, an old fellow named Clem Hunter. Hunter confessed that he'd lied about not recognizing the stranger and he wanted to clear his conscience. He wrote us, "You certainly won't find it out from anybody else, because me and the town clerk, who's dead, were the only ones who knew who this fellow was. If you'll come see me, I'll tell you the whole story."
But 2 days before we got back to Derryville, old Clem Hunter up and kicked the bucket. Pneumonia. Boy, you should have seen the maestro. Our last hope of solving the mystery 6 feet under. But the maestro says, now that we're here, I'm not going back to New York without taking another whack at the Mayfield. Well, we drive over to the Mayfield farm and practically a blizzard. The roads are so bad, Ma Mayfield makes us stay overnight.
Late that same afternoon, the storm subsided a bit, and Ellie and I went outside to find Josh Bullen hammering away at a thick pole driven into the frozen earth right off the porch.
Hi, Mr. Bullen. What are you doing?
Making a snowman, Mr. Queen.
A snowman?
That's steady enough, I reckon. Now to pack more snow around.
Oh, may I help, Mr. Bullen?
Sure thing, Miss Porter. Pitch right in.
Oh, by George, that looked like fun. Move over, Nicky.
I hurry, I ask first.
Seeing this pole, Josh, stuck in the ground this way.
Sort of reminds you of the fellow we found hanging in the cornfield last summer, don't you?
Yes. Ever hear anything more about him after he escaped from the Derryville Hospital, Josh?
Nary word. Say, this has come along fine. You make his head, Miss Porter.
Oh, fine.
Hope Josie likes him. She's watching from her bedroom window up there.
Hi, Josie. Like it, Mrs. B?
Oh, Josh, he's lovely.
Well, wait, he ain't finished. He still needs eyes, nose, and a mouth.
And a pipe, Josh. Take a pipe in his mouth. Oh, how my baby would have loved him.
Baby? She's still...
Don't mind, folks.
Sure, Josie. Pipe it is.
Yes, who ever heard of a snowman without a pipe?
A corn cob, Josh.
Yeah, gotta have a corn cob. Oh, blame it, I left my cob up in my bedroom this morning. Of course, Paul Mayfield's got a raft of them. Keeps all his cobs up in that attic room of his. But I guess we better not bother Paul. Might start shooting at you for Jonathan again, eh, Mr. Queen? Oh, but gee, here's that other corn cob of mine, right here in my jeans. Forgot all about the second one.
There, Josie, how's he look?
Oh, hi, Inspector, Sergeant. Look at this.
Hey, that's some production.
A snowman. Where's the maestro?
Ellie, what? It's right here a second ago.
Here I am, Nicky.
Oh.
Him and his movie camera.
Yes, Sergeant. I remembered he was in the car.
Gonna take movies of the snowman, son?
Dad, you're a mind reader. Who's there?
Who's doing that? Somebody's at the door of this iceberg they call a bedroom.
Climb it a bit, son. See who it is.
Oh, must be 10 below 0 in here. Yes, who is it?
Harry, it's me.
Nicky crying. Oh, wait, Nicky. Oh, coming.
I just saw it.
Saw what, Nicky?
I couldn't sleep. I got up and looked out my bedroom window at the snowman in the front yard and...
What did you see?
The snowman. He's bleeding.
You want to wake the others?
Okay, Inspector.
There you see?
That brown stain all over the snowman's chest. Ellie, what in thunderation do you think you're doing?
Photographing a snowman, Dad. Lucky this moonlight's so bright. Now, let's have a look.
Oh, if that ain't blood, real blood, I'll turn in my badge.
Somebody's idea of a joke.
Nicky, go back to bed.
Oh, no.
Hey, go on, Nicky.
All right, Inspector.
Joke, eh? Some joke.
Maestro, it's a dead man under this snowman.
I thought so. Strapped to the pole by his belt?
Yeah, just like that scarecrow guy last summer.
Two ugly stab wounds in his chest, son.
I brushed the snow off him around his head, Sergeant.
Yeah.
Lord.
Oh, it's the same guy.
The man who escaped from the Derryville Hospital.
The scarecrow man.
¶¶
Why isn't Bailey back? He freezes as hard as this corpse in the front yard here. Again, all identification marks gone, ratted.
How long do you figure he's been dead?
Well, I'd say since late last night, son.
Yes, about the time the snow stopped. We slept through the whole thing.
Bailey.
Yes, Buster?
Mushing from Nome? Well, what'd you find out? Where's the single set of tracks leading up to the snowman come from?
The Mayfield barn, Inspector. Blood in there. And signs of a fight.
Murdered in the barn, huh? And the killer carried the dead man to this spot, knocked down Josh Bullen's snowman, slung the corpse to the pole with his own belt, and rebuilt a snowman around it.
Why do you suppose he did that now, my son?
To delay discovery of the crime, Sergeant. The killer was afraid of us. By the time the snow melted, we'd long since have left the neighborhood.
It'd have worked, too, if the dead man's blood hadn't soaked through the snow. Billy, was there any clue in the barn to the killer?
I looked my eyes out, Inspector. No dice.
And these tracks don't tell us anything. Killer wore huge galoshes. Could have been anyone's.
But aren't there any other tracks, really, to show where the killer came from or which way he went?
Nary a track. Anywhere's on the Mayfield property.
Dad, that means the victim came to the barn during the snowstorm, as did his murderer. Then more snow fell and wiped out all the tracks they'd made.
So by the time the killer lugged his victim's body from the barn to the front yard here, all he left was this one set of tracks.
Hey, wait. Then where are the killer's tracks escaping from the yard here after he put the body in the snowman? There ain't no escaping track.
Sergeant, you've hit it. The only place the killer could have escaped to without leaving further tracks in the snow is up onto the porch of the Mayfield farmhouse here.
Yeah. He could have made it from the snowman to the porch in one big step.
But anyway, that means the killer is one of the people in this farmhouse.
Yes, Dad. At last we know the stranger was murdered by one of the Mayfield tribe. So let's wake him up and find out which one.
Well, we went to work on the Mayfields. We might just as well have saved our breath. They all claimed they didn't know a thing about the corpse and the snowman. So we turned the whole mess over to the local sheriff and headed for home. You don't like to remember, Ellery, the next few weeks. Here it is. Snap your head off for a look. Haul out his reels of movie film that he'd shot on our two trips to Dairyville and run them over and over. But anyway, one night, he was showing his shots of the bloodstained snowman when...
Nicky, stop the machine. Sergeant, put the lights on.
Yeah.
Why the excitement, son?
What corpse?
Now I know who killed that man.
You know who killed him? But, Maestro, we don't even know who he was.
You mean the victim?
Yeah.
I've known that for some time.
What? You have?
Not his name, of course. But it wasn't the victim's identity which held me up. It was his killer's identity.
And now you know that, too? But how can you, Ellery? All you've done is run the snowman movie.
They're what told me, Nicky. Didn't you notice a difference between the Josh Bullen snowman and the snowman the killer built around the corpse?
No.
The snow at the base of the killer's snowman had been shoveled up. Don't you see? After concealing the body inside the snowman, the killer then began poking in the snow at its feet with a shovel.
He'd lost something in the snow and was looking for it.
But what else?
My films even answer that. There's an object in the shots of the original snowman that's missing from the shots of the made-over snowman.
Something missing? What, Marshall?
Josh Bullen's corncob pipe.
Hey, that's right. When we found the made-over snowman with the corpse inside, the pipe wasn't there.
Exactly. The killer dropped the pipe accidentally and shoveled frantically around trying to find it. He never did find it. Otherwise, he'd have stuck it back in the snowman's mouth.
Yeah, so we'd think it was still the same snowman and not get suspicious and find the body.
That's all very well, Mr. Queen. But what's the missing corncob got to do with the killer of the stranger?
The missing corncob, Nicky, tells me who the killer was. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have the mystery of the Scarecrow and the Snowman. Have you puzzled it out yet? Well, let's compare solutions with our guest armchair detective. Nicky, will you introduce our guest, please?
Well, Ellery, our first guest tonight is Miss Jean Cagney, the famous screen star and sister of Jimmy Cagney. Our second guest is Mr. Peter Kuchek, Executive Secretary of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. All right, Ellery.
Thank you, Nicky. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take a moment here to remind you that the March of Dimes to fight infantile paralysis is on right now. Won't you help protect America's children from this dread disease by sending your dimes and dollars, as much as you can afford, to President Roosevelt, Washington, D.C.? Thank you.
And now, Miss Cagney, who is the murderer?
I'd say it was Ma Mayfield. Have you any reason? Well, I would suspect that Ma Mayfield wouldn't have a second pipe on hand.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think she'd be strong enough to be able to commit the crime and to reconstruct the snowman.
Thank you, Miss Cagney. And Mr. Cusack, who do you think the murderer is?
I think the murderer was Josh Mayfield, Ellery.
Well, why do you think that?
I don't know what his motive was, but the clue of the missing corncob pipe makes me feel that it was he, because he referred to the fact that that Pa Mayfield had this collection, and Pa Mayfield being very fussy and irritable, I would think that Josh would not want to lose the pipe.
You mean Josh Bourne, the husband of Josie Mayfield?
Excuse
yes.
me.
Thank you, Mr. Cusack and Miss Cagney. We'll let you know in just a moment whether you've hit the solution to our mystery. But first, here's Ernest Chappell, who can't seem to get his mind off sabotage.
Well, and it is sabotage when a common sick headache makes you lose out on work or pleasure. You can't do a first-class job or enjoy your fun when you've got pounding head pains, plus the upset stomach and jittery nerves that may accompany a common sick headache. And that's why I say the next time you're feeling miserable with a headache, step up to the nearest drugstore fountain and ask for a Bromo Seltzer. Now, 10 cents is all it costs to try Bromo Seltzer. And once you experience the quick, effective relief it gives, you'll want to get a bottle for your home medicine chest.
Harry, you said you knew who that dead stranger was.
Well, Dad, remember your mentioning that we got a letter from the Derryville Justice of the Peace?
Sam Munder, who wrote saying that he knew who this stranger was?
Yes. Now, what could a justice of the peace and a town clerk know that other members of a rural community might not know? Well, what do we usually associate with justices of the peace?
Marriages. People forms.
Yes. And marriages also involve a town clerk, who probably issues a license and certainly records the marriage in the town roll.
So you figure the stranger had been married in Derryville years before.
Right. But who else would know of the stranger's marriage? Only the Mayfields, because the killer is one of them. So we must ask, what woman at the Mayfield farm was of marriageable age? Only one. Josie, the daughter.
Josie's married to Josh Bullen.
Conclusion, Josie and the stranger had been married before Josie's marriage to Josh Bullen. A secret marriage, because no one in Derryville was able to recognize the stranger from that photo I took of him at the hospital last summer. So it was reasonable to conclude that one of the Mayfield tribe had killed the stranger to keep his secret marriage to Josie from becoming public knowledge.
Josie and the stranger elope or something. Old man Mayfield finds out and either drives the man away or buys him off. There's been something pretty raw about the man that the Mayfields couldn't stomach.
So when they thought Josie's husband would never turn up again, Josie never bothered to get a divorce.
And when Josie married Josh Bullen, she committed bigamy.
Yes. Well, the husband did turn up again last July, probably with demand for more money which the Mayfields couldn't or wouldn't meet. So one of the family stabbed him early that Sunday morning and hid the body in the cornfield scarecrow till it could be disposed of permanently at nightfall. But we came along during the day, found the stranger still alive, took him to the hospital, and he escaped. And the one who knew Josie's bigamous secret was loose again.
Then why did he come back in January?
Well, we'll never know exactly, Sergeant. Anyway, the same Mayfield murdered him for keeps this time and hid the body in the snowman so that we'd fail to discover the crime and leave.
But who is the killer, son? How do you know?
The missing corncob pipe tells me, Dad.
Corncob pipe?
We know the killer wanted a corncob and hadn't located the one he'd lost in the deep snow. Because if he had found it, he'd have stuck it back in the snowman's mouth. And he didn't. But that fact clears Josh Bullen and old Pa Mayfield.
There's Bullen and his father-in-law? How so, son?
Because either man could easily have got another corncob to stick into the snowman's mouth, Dad.
How do you figure that out, Ellie?
Well, we know that Josh Bullen had a second corn cob up in his bedroom. And we also know that Pa Mayfield kept his corn cobs in his attic room. Either man could have procured a corn cob to replace the lost one merely by stealing up to his own room in the middle of the night while the rest of us were asleep. Since the killer didn't replace the lost pipe, it means he didn't have one to replace it with and couldn't get another from his own room.
But, Maestro, that leaves only...
the two women of the house.
Precisely. Could the murderer have been Josie, Josh's wife? No. It was a man-sized job to carry the dead body from the barn to the front yard, demolish the original snowman, tie the corpse to the pole, and build a new snowman around it. Josie is an invalid, bedridden most of the time, so Josie couldn't possibly have done it.
The old lady?
Yes, Sergeant. Ma Mayfield. Did Ma Mayfield have the strength to commit both these strenuous crimes?
Oh, yes.
Josh told us she even helped with the farming. In fact, Josh said she was as strong as a plowmare. Yes, Ma Mayfield killed her daughter's husband to protect Josie's reputation in that rural community and save what was left of the poor girl's life. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the mystery. I want to thank Miss Cagney and Mr. Cusack for appearing as guest armchair detectives this evening. We want especially to compliment Miss Cagney on her skill in solving the crime. We have for both Miss Cagney and Mr. Cusack a personal gift from Bromo Seltzer, also an autographed copy of my latest mystery anthology, The Female of the Species, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
While we're waiting for Ellery to tell us something about next week's mystery, come on there, swing aboard our famous talking train. Now, you couldn't ask for better advice than that. Fight headache three ways with Bromo Seltzer. Your own experience will tell you it isn't always just the pounding in your head that makes you feel so miserable. It's also the upset stomach and the jumpy nerves that may accompany the headache. And that's why we say, for that kind of three-way misery, take a Bromo Seltzer. Remember, it fights common sick headache these three ways.
Bromo Seltzer quickly relieves headache pain. Bromo Seltzer helps settle upset stomach. Bromo Seltzer helps calm jumpy nerves.
Now, you can take Bromo Seltzer while it's still fizzing or after it settles down. Use it only as directed on the label. For persistent or recurring headaches, see your doctor.
But when it's a common sick headache that's got you down, take this tip from our educated train.
Fight the headache three ways.
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
And now, Ellery, let's hear about next week.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, next week we tell you a ghost story. Yes, a ghost story with a real ghost that seems immune to bullets. Don't miss next week, Adventure of the Family Ghost. Our guests will be Martha Scott and Mark Conway.
And don't forget the other great Bromo Seltzer show friends, Vox Pop, the show that travels America. Next Monday, Vox Pop takes you to the Winchester Repeating Arms Company at New Haven, Connecticut. Consult your local paper for the time and station. Music for The Adventures of Ellery Queen is by Charles Paul. This is Ernest Chappell reminding you to catch the Bromo Seltzer special again next week. Same time, same station.
Fight the headache three ways.
Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer, Bromo Seltzer.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. Hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from Ellery Queen. I don't think we have more from Peter Troy as of yet, but we'll be hearing more from him. Anyway, it's all at relicradio.com. All past episodes of Case Closed, thousands of other old-time radio shows, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. That's how this is all made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with Sherlock Holmes and that hammer guy in a brand new episode of Case Closed.